Testing, testing.
Okay, the Fighting Tigers, the China Six, the Vikings, the Headhunters, the War Gods, the Blue Devils, the Hickories, the Buccaneers, the Freedom Army.
Okay, let's roll with this, and then we'll talk afterwards for a little bit.
Where's my damn Kleenexes? We're getting over it, but we still have some of it.
The funk is among us.
This is kind of like a hellacious thing.
Hey, this is Kevin Stark from the Toy and Action Figure Museum in Pauls Valley, Oklahoma, and you're listening to the Comic Pop Library.
To another episode of Comic Pop License to Read, brought to you by Comic Pop Library. I'm Richard, along with
Jonathan,
Lenny,
and Logan.
And in today's episode, we are going to be looking at Suzanne Lambden's Morbid Hearts, the first book of the Dead Hearts series, produced in 2013. It just had a remastered edition, a re-edited edition in 2015. So if you're out there, be sure you get the 2015 version, because that's what's out there. If you have the 2013 version, you might keep it as a keepsake because they are no longer in print, and kind of cool to have some of those first prints sometimes. The publisher is part of the McGannon Group by Wyvern's Peak.
You got it.
Boy, I got it. I got it, do you see? Michael.
You never heard of a wyvern before?
I have, but I have trouble pronouncing it all the time.
Wyvern. Yeah.
That's just me. That's one of those words that trips me up.
Yeah.
But what this is about is Caden Sinclair was a 17-year-old girl from America's heartland who loved horseback riding, a comfortable pair of jeans, and hanging out with her friends. That was before the scourge. It's been 11 months since a deadly virus wiped out billions. For the few who remain, life as they knew it is over. Nations fell, governments were rendered obsolete, and resources became scarce. The human race had to start over, facing even greater odds. Zombies. Now Cadence leads safety patrols and supply missions for a survivor's camp at Pike's Peak. When a routine mission goes south, Cadence gets more than she bargained for. She must lead a ragtag group of teens against an onslaught of scavengers, zombies, power-hungry military leaders, and a mutating virus. Her team, the Fighting Tigers, face increasing dangers threatening the stability of the camp. An uprising in their fragile new home may bring further devastation, but what they discover lurking beyond the security fences could be the end of the human race.
Dun, dun, dun.
And this is one where it's definitely geared for the young adult market, but adults can get into it and have fun with it as well. This took me a little bit of getting used to. I wasn't ready for the fast pace right off the bat, because Suzanne does kind of clip it along pretty fast. And at the beginning, I was kind of like, ooh, we're introducing new things all along here. Wow. Mm-hmm. And then I got used to it and kind of give a forbearance. Lenny and I have read the second book. Jonathan and Logan have knocked out the first book. So by the time I got finished with the first into the second, that didn't bother me as much. What about your reactions to just the speed of how she wrote?
I kind of agree that, I was fine with the speed, and I was fine with the fast-paced changes, and it's really like It's setting up a very large narrative in the first book. It's the introduction of, I think, in the first book alone, at least 40 characters.
Yeah.
And, you know, and trying to introduce them without just walking them by in a line. This is this person. This is this person. You know, and pulling that introduction into the story to have that many. And this is just their core group.
Yeah.
You know, to have that many characters pulled in. I remember in the first introduction of Thor early on in the first book, you know, you think that there's going to be a fight and one of them's going to end up dead immediately. Wow. And of course, you know, not to give too much away, that doesn't happen. But a lot does happen with Thor, and he becomes a very dynamic, important character.
True.
So you're like, when you look at his introduction, you're like, you know, at first you may be like, well, that just seems rude. And then you kind of realize that, you know, these, I mean, if you look, it's almost like the body snatchers came and ate everyone's parents. Like most of the people that were out in the world that weren't protected, that, you know, these younger people had kind of gotten to a protected place, and then there's no one left to fight. And then they have this reservist army group that they're with, but they're always busy patrolling the fences and beyond the Pikes Peak area. And it's this group, the Fighting Tigers, most of the action goes on in the Garden of the Gods area near Colorado Springs. And that's another thing about the fast pace. She's moving through the scenery of a place that does exist and moving through it very seamlessly. Like, it's obvious she's been there. It's obvious she knows the area.
If I remember right, she lived there. She loves the area, like you said. She currently lives in Kansas.
Yeah.
I believe it's Wichita where she lives at, but she's still, her heart's there in Colorado Springs. And that's why a lot of these landmarks are featured so prominently.
Well, I mean, it's like she didn't, it wasn't hard for her to put it in this place. I've been there myself, and I felt like the Garden of the Gods was well portrayed. Pike's Peak was well portrayed. It was a really well done opener. And you know, when you look at it, like, this is the start of a pretty long, pretty complicated, deep fantasy series. Yeah. That's kind of backspringing off a zombie plague that, you know, when you open up, you're like, okay, zombies, you know, that's great. And that is great. And then, you know, it gets so deep with other possibilities and scenarios that are manifesting, and you go into a whole new world. So, I mean, yeah. By the time we got into the second book, I was definitely... hang on, we've got a tragedy. But I was like you. By the time we got into the second book, I was in the groove with the pacing and the characters, and I was fine with it. So,
what about you? Did you find the pacing pretty fast, Logan, or were you comfortable with it?
I liked it, though. I did take a break in the middle because of...
I forgot you were halfway through it and brought it back, so I had to take it back to him. That was my fault, so that was my bad.
He's like, I quit reading it, but I can't remember why.
Oh, I did finish it.
Oh, yeah, you stole it. Yeah.
Took the first half fairly quickly, then waited 2 years?
No, just about a year at most, if that.
Because it's only been out for a little over three years.
Yeah. Or by what you guys
We got them last year at AFW is where I picked them up.
Okay, so not 2 years.
No, it hasn't been long yet.
You might, maybe six months, five months, somewhere in there. Yeah.
Time is a relative thing here in the podcast world. We're not real people. We're just like floating brains.
What about you, Jonathan? What did you think about the pace?
Then we'll start
getting into the details.
I thought it was really, really slow.
Okay.
But it's not really my cup of tea.
You still thought it was slow after reading it, huh?
After I got into it a little bit more, after I started getting into more of the details, it kind of got a little faster for me. But I just finished the book today, so yeah, it was kind of a little slow for me from kind of the beginning to the end. But I think I kind of liked it because it actually got me involved in something that I normally want to read.
Okay, well, that's cool.
So you're normally not into the young adult kind of tween-aged heartthrob kind of adventure.
I'm not big on zombies, vampires, love stories, stuff like that. I like zombie stories and stuff, but I like
For the Dawn of the Dead, the more serious.
Yeah, there's a book series that I really like. It's kind of bloody and gory, and that's what I look for in a good zombie story. And in this story, it's kind of, to me, it was kind of like Twilight. It had a lot of love. I mean, it had some blood and gore in it.
But that wasn't the focus.
It wasn't the focus. No. What the focus on is kind of a romantic view on things. And to me, that's not really...
I don't know if it's a romantic view. I think it's just...
There's a view, but yeah, it's more... They're both around the same level.
Yeah. Well, and see, I'll get into that a little bit more because something that's been bugging me about this whole thing, because there's kind of like a triangle going on and it's kind of bugging me a little bit.
Yeah.
But we'll go into that later.
But you have to realize this is young adult fiction primarily. And she does, I'll admit, Suzanne does do this. She does involve relationships.
Yeah.
The zombies are, it's kind of like Walking Dead. The zombies are a little bit of a back burner. They're there, but it's about what the humans are going through.
I hate to send you guys a reality check this early in the program, but this is the most realistic part of this fiction. These teenage romances, because especially with most of your parents dead gone missing, it's not just the drama. It's just the fact that, these are 16-year-old kids basically controlling their little world on their own. Yeah. Of course, they're all going to fall in love. I mean, it's just only natural. It is a totally realistic in that aspect.
And they're going to be fit because they're busy fighting zombies.
Yeah, they're going to be fit because fighting zombies. That's
true. they're all nice and hot looking, and that helps.
Exercise.
Yeah, so they all look really good. They've all been exercising every day, eating scant meals. You know, like really honing their combat skills. And one thing that I did kind of take a little bit of a back to was the skill sets. Now I realize that Suzanne set this several months, like maybe 9 months. Into a zombie apocalypse scenario. It's already kind of been brewing for quite a while. These people have already kind of congregated. These are the stronger, the cream at the top, because most everyone else has already shuffled off the mortal coil, God rest their souls. But these people that are left to me are a little too finely tuned. I mean, I realize they would be pretty finely tuned, but I think that the level is a little bit cartoonish. At the level of skill, and I'm not, and you know, another thing I had to remember when I was reading it is it's a fun adventure story for younger people. It doesn't need to be realistic that it would take, you know, a lifetime to master things like a katana blade and, you know, sniper rifles. It wouldn't just be.
And what you hit on is kind of what I kind of gleaned. You said cartoony. When I really got into this and got used to the pacing, I was like, this is pretty much a novel for either a screenplay or I could see it as a comic book very easily.
It has a very animated feel, and that's one great thing about it. I will definitely give her props on the way she is able to animate and differentiate so many characters. Let me help you out, Jonathan. He's going to die over here. Actually, I got to read this, but you were too busy searching. But yes, in fact, it bothers to mention that Whisper does, in fact, smoke cigarettes and pot. So it's okay.
That's not what I was looking for. I was looking to make another point. But
Well, keep looking then, I guess. I don't know. I thought I was helping you.
Yeah, because that was the last point you were on.
Yeah.
True. Let's get into the...
Well, I actually wanted to bring... Because you brought up Walking Dead. And one of the interesting things that I was thinking about... Because I was thinking about this on this way over here. Who was the one who had brought up Walking Dead?
I did.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Give it to us, Jonathan. Preach, brother.
The only thing is, the reference I made is, you know, Walking Dead's much more serious, but she's looking at a little bit more of the human side than the blood and gores.
What I was wanting to say is, to me, I like Walking Dead, but I think that it's kind of one-dimensional, and when she brings in vampires and
they're not actual vampires, but...
They bring in vampires and wear pumas and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I think that it would be kind of interesting to see a TV show like that.
We're jumping way ahead, folks. Yeah.
But, didn't know the books. Halfway through.
And that's why I said it moved pretty fastly for me, because she was introducing so much stuff. And we'll be getting to those even a little bit later. But it starts off with the Fighting Tigers is the team that they follow. Cadence is the leader. Highbrow, second in command. Whispers, the sniper. Freeborn's kind of a tracker type.
Yeah.
Tracker. I think Tracker's a fair word
like
for
two
her.
Kids.
Yeah, Smack, who is my favorite, and Dodger.
Dodger.
I think that's the team.
And these people.
And Blaze.
Was there Blaze part of the team?
Yes.
Whisper, Freeborn, Dodger, Blaze, Highbrow, and there's six of them, and Cadence.
And they basically see a
dragon. You mentioned dragon. Dragon's actually he's a very big character, especially in the second book, but also in the first book. And he's in China 6.
Yep, he's in China 6. And there's several teams of these.
Let me go ahead and list them. And I think
these are
scout patrols that were put together and purposely named for. They were put together by people that were in a very military way, grouping like things together. So these names. They were given to people.
Kind of code names?
Well, in a way. They were nicknames, but camp names, because they didn't want people's personal information. It was real important to them to leave the old life behind. So they were names that were basically given to these people.
When they came in.
When they came into camp, like Smack was smacking on bubblegum, and it's not the Sarge, it's a different guy. But
there's somebody in
Destroy.
That.
Destroyer, yeah. It means a big horse. It's a big type of horse, I think.
Cadence
his name
was named in that same method, and it was the exact same name she already had.
She was such a militant-minded person. She was already such a natural leader that they just called her by Cadence, and that was actually her birth-given name. Yeah. So, because her name is, in fact, Cadence Sinclair, and she goes by Cadence. I think in the first book especially, the next most important character is Highbrow.
Yep.
He's one of my favorite characters, too, and he's a very interesting character. He's Cadence's second-in-command, and in a way, they lead the Fighting Tigers, and in a way, they also lead a lot of the teenage groups.
Right.
And probably the oldest two of the scouts, I think.
There's a lot of them that are 17. Actually,
I think
Blaze is 16. Dodger's 15. He's the youngest. It doesn't mention Smack. She's not right here. Smack's only 12 years old. Did you know that? I didn't even realize that.
I need to see something.
Here, go ahead. I've been holding
it.
But
I think out of the scouts, out of the whole team.
So there are seven.
Cadence is the oldest because
she's
real
17.
Close to being going into
The adult army, Once they're 18, they let them go into the
Freedom Army.
Freedom Army, I think, is correct. And this is all adults are pretty much in this group enlisted into the Freedom Army, and they're all coming to the command of a person that they call the captain, who most people, especially it seems like Cadence and Highbrow, respect. He's a good leader. And then his second in command is a man they call Sarge, and he is a very rough character, but we'll get more into him later, too.
Oh. Scouts are apparently not supposed to have guns, too.
The teens are not allowed to carry guns except for their sniper, I think, is allowed to have his rifle for some missions, and the leaders are allowed to carry a weapon. But they have to... And this is actually very normal.
Because April had a question about that, because later on in the book they say that the scout patrols can't have firearms, but then it was like Cadence has his AK-47 and Whisper has a...
They take those guns.
Yeah, they take
them. No, this is at the very beginning of the book.
At the very beginning, they're allowed to have them. And then they make the rule.
But it was just two.
No, they still had
them. No, the scouts were allowed.
They had stolen at least some guns for the rest of the people.
It's like you said, the leader is permitted to have it and the sniper. Those are the only two bases. And that's why I understood it, because April was like...
But Cadence was their leader, and Whisper was the sniper, so that's why they had
the
guns.
That's why they had them, because April was like,
and
why
they had
they have them?
Unofficially borrowed some other guns.
That's later. Whenever they see things starting to go south at Pike's Peak, they see things starting to go south. There's zombies in the fences. It's that kind of situation, and they decide to go ahead and take the guns.
I think what Logan's talking about is when they come across, and this is another point, because... Let's get back into the story a little bit. It starts out with a fighter jet crashing. A pilot crashes. They're taking the duffel bag and stuff back to the camp. They run across basically a battle that has happened with zombies. And this is where Logan says they kind of pilfered some weapons because they did pick up some
weapons. I think that's right. Yeah, they did. And they didn't give all those. Right. They didn't turn all those weapons
in
either.
Because Caden said, keep them hidden.
Yeah,
but this
because
is where Rafe...
she knew that Sarge would want the weapons for himself. Yeah. And she was like, that's not going to happen.
Sarge is built as a very dark, very sadistic character.
Until, well, I'm not going to get into that because I want to get into it towards Stone.
But this is where they come in with Rafe. He's
Cadence's boyfriend in the beginning. Yeah.
And I think he's a misunderstood character to a degree. And I've had a debate with, I think it was
me. It was Jonathan. Me in the car. Yeah.
We'll go get them, Tigers.
This is one of the where they were in a mixed up battle. And he and the Cadence and her group comes up and says, okay, everybody's dead. And then they find him in the back of a troop carrier or a pickup of some type. But he was on the 50 cal. Well, he runs out of ammo on the 50 cal. Doesn't say he had a weapon per se, but I assume he probably used that as well. But he said he ran out of ammo, so then he hid. And to me, it was like, okay, if I'm a soldier, yeah, you can look at that as cowardice that you hid. But if you have zombies attacking you, what is your survivability if you're out of ammo and fighting hand-to-hand?
Bad.
Not much. So he basically covered up with a body, pretending to be dead. So to me, I looked at it as that, you know, he was looking out for himself to a degree. I'll admit that.
Yeah.
It was like, live to fight another day.
Well, you disagree with the author then.
Yeah. Wasn't but, the thing he was a coward about stealing their bike?
I have mixed feelings, too, about him.
Yeah.
And I kind of thought that he was...
Sorry,
wasn't
Logan.
The thing he was called a coward about stealing their bike or something similar?
No. It was not fighting.
It was about
continuing to fight. Not
there was an incident where he stole their bike.
Yeah, he stole it to go back to base.
Yeah, and they did
Thor's right.
Call him some stuff on that as well.
That's what I thought they were calling him a coward.
No,
it was about him not continuing the fight after.
Yeah. Which you know, I was okay with Rafe being a coward, but I mean, according to the author, I'm just saying from her perspective,
from her
he's a coward.
Yeah, she is. But I can see it from the other side where I can kind of sympathize.
I love to play a little bit. I love to play devil's advocate too.
But cowardice comes into effect later on in the book when he gets something else happens. And I think Jonathan might lead into that here after a bit because it leads into the vampire portion of the book. But basically, go ahead.
Infection,
Jonathan,
requires blood drinking or stuff.
No,
as well.
Not necessarily or blood drinking.
Might not require it, but
what are we talking about?
Turning.
Yeah.
Getting the virus. He said it is only
bloodborne,
drinking
mainly,
blood,
but not necessarily ish.
They find out later that it could be. It's like HIV.
Mutating into air.
You know, or, you know, if you have an open gut and it's tainted blood and it mixes in with your blood, you're
I get it. Yeah, sure.
And that's what was leading into with Rafe. He basically gets covered up with not just human blood, but zombie blood. And it seeps into his pores, around his eyes, into his mouth and stuff. So it soaks into him. So this is a mutation of the virus that they were talking about, which leads to his vampiric nature, which Jonathan already alluded to.
Yeah, we've already spoiled this one. Spoiler alert, we tell the whole book.
No, I think it, when she comes to the whole cowardice part is I think, you know, soldiers are going to fight until the very end. Oh. You know, a lot of the times it is that way.
No.
But they are going to fight until they go down. And I mean,
depends on your constitution. It depends on your constitution.
Okay, but
you can sacrifice yourself, and you will sacrifice yourself for your team members. But if your team members are already dead, you're the only one left, you're going to try to evade and escape.
Sure, that makes sense. Unless you've lost your mind, and there's many people that run out into a barrage of gunfire.
And people do that too. Yeah.
But that's not because they think they're going to win.
No, they're just gone.
Okay, all I'm saying is, I'm not saying that Rafe is or isn't a coward. What I am saying is that I like his portrayal because put into a very tough situation, he takes away that he is pinned as a coward. No matter what, surviving that battle, he's pinned as a coward.
Oh, yeah.
So it doesn't matter what we think. It's what the Fighting Tigers and China Six and the other people in the camp think. So he's already vilified.
Oh, yeah. And he was thinking a little selfishly. I'm not here to say he wasn't.
Yeah.
But you are taught to escape and evade if you can.
That affects in the alteration.
It has, yeah, it does. That's why I was bringing in the vampiric, because it does affect in his alteration to the vampiric form. But I like how Suzanne made a character that isn't just black and white. You can see them from both sides.
Well, no, that's what I was going to say. So, yeah. That one act does not define him either. And, you know, like, I've done things in my life that are very brave. I have. You probably have, too. And I've also done things in my life that are cowardly. Now, had somebody that I cared about that was also important in a very enclosed group of people seen me doing something cowardly and brought it out and talked about it, you know, and shamed me, that would become a very big, important moving point in my life. But in the end of the day, until he was kind of caught sneaking away or whatever you want to call it.
Stealing a bike and a gun accidentally?
You know,
stealing a bike and possibly accidentally a gun? Because wasn't that what it was?
Well, he wasn't a scout. Rafe was old enough. He was in the regular army.
Yeah. Remember there was...
And another point I wanted to bring out about this, Jonathan said something... he said that soldiers will fight until they're... You got to remember, these soldiers that are mostly in this book, kind of a faceless mask, other than Rafe and the few that we've mentioned, there are still people.
Yeah.
And
they're more
and the way she...
Military.
Yeah, but there a lot of them were conscripted.
Yeah.
Maybe even Rafe. I'm not sure. I can't remember. But I don't think he was. Yeah, I think he was actually a cadet.
Yeah, he...
At the Air Force Academy, which is in Colorado Springs, and they bring that up later.
They made a big deal about him getting into the Freedom Army, and then he was waiting for Cadence to get there as well.
Yeah, and the thing was that, you know, so, you know, he. I'm not saying that that means he should automatically be brave or whatever and do everything the brave way. I don't think everything that Cadence does is brave.
Oh, no.
Lots of things.
A lot of selfish stuff.
And that makes her a dynamic character. You know, she has a lot of hubris. She has a lot of levels and a lot of things she's going through. She, for one thing, she's trying to be a leader at 17 years old of an entire group of people. And basically, you know, we've already given away enough, so we've already said how Rafe turns into a vampire. So sure, yeah, she succeeds. So in the end of the first book, she pretty much is the leader of the camp.
Mm. Well, we never did mention any of the leaders dying or the massive invasion of...
Yeah, but you mentioned Rafe turning into a vampire, which was the biggest kind of...
Actually, that could have happened without none of those.
It could have, but I'm just saying it's way more of a giveaway. It's way more of a spoiler to say that, yeah, vampires show up in the story than to say that some of the leaders die that we've exactly barely mentioned.
Vampires, because they don't actually just eat the blood, do they? They eat all the characters or just the blood? I can't remember.
They feed on each other. But you got to remember, these are vampires born out of mutation. Yeah. These first ones that we are experiencing with this book,
they're all
virally born vampires, and it alludes that there's something further back in time going on. That you're going to find out more about. But
mentions of the other thing.
But this is something brand new. These other things that aren't really even in this book, they don't even fully understand what Rafe is. So, and I love this about him. He becomes so much more of a character because he starts out as just this kind of cowardly guy that gets sick, and you're like, he's going to die. That's cool because he was coward. Ha ha. You know, and then he doesn't turn into a zombie. He turns into this new kind of vampire.
And see, like, he didn't even know that he was going to turn into this.
He had no clue.
The first clue he got was in the whole bathroom scene with the girl.
Didn't he start smelling blood and stuff like that?
Well, she was egging him on to do things, and he went to go kiss on her neck, and he ended up biting her neck. What?
Chomp.
Yeah, Chomp, he ended up biting her.
Just doing sound effects for you.
Her neck instead of...
instead of sweetly kissing her neck.
Yeah, and she kind of pushes him away, and then...
And that's Savannah, right?
No.
That was not Savannah.
Okay, but
Savannah hasn't even
this
met
is when
me.
He's
that's
first.
Right, it's not Savannah.
Savannah
but,
hasn't even met Rafe yet.
Yeah,
but Rafe. This is the girl Rafe turns into vampire. Psycho, right?
No.
Okay.
That's Savannah.
That is Savannah. Okay. Yes. Yeah. Good.
This girl she.
This is one that was going to be, I think, revenge.
Oh yeah, that's right. And she just turns into a zombie, right?
And they end up, you know, killing her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then he makes... Rafe doesn't make the little kids. Whoever or whatever messed with Rafe.
I think they must have been infected with...
The same thing.
The same virus. They brought them into the camp.
With Santa and...
And
Chopper? No, not
No, sure. It was...
I knew you were going to ask this. Hang on a second. I'm back here on the right page. Hang on, just... it's not Sterling, is it?
An old biker.
No. Sterling was a character, though.
Yeah,
Sterling
I've got the names of them right here, but hang on.
Was a character.
I'm going to notice.
Raven or something like that.
No, that was one of the...
Raven's one of the gals from Vikings.
Yeah.
But this is one where...
It was in my head.
They...
Yeah.
It's a virus situation.
Yeah.
Kind of like Resident Evil. You could say probably like Doom or... You know, it was some type of virus. But then like Lenny's saying, there's a little bit of hint that there's possibly more going on behind the scenes as well. But we don't know, even with Lynn and I reading the second book, that still kind of leaves some stuff in the dark. So she's bringing you on a longer journey, even though these are moving fairly quickly.
And this well goes much deeper than just zombies and zombie-generated vampires. I mean, there's so much more going on later on. I think one of the things that we've successfully avoided so far is what happens with Cadence in the end, and let's try to save that one.
And we won't do
that. The hint that it's possibly further back knowledge is not with the zombies or the ghoul kings.
Nomad. There he is.
Yeah,
he's not on here. It's for some reason, him and Savannah aren't listed.
Which might need be...
You guys out there in TV land, this is literally a list of like 60 characters.
Yeah. Say that again.
That there's possibly some previous knowledge is possibly BS even by Plague standards, because the zombies, that's after you die, you walk around trying to feed on people. The vampires, that's... You need blood to sustain yourself for some reason, but you're now stronger and all that than you used to be.
True.
All right.
Yeah.
And that's why I said she's given little, I'm not going to say hints or cues, but you can kind of have, you get this feeling, especially after you read the second book, that there's something more going on.
Right.
But in the first book, no, it's all about the virus. But second book, kind of like
a bit that hints.
Virus that she mentions that started this particular zombie plague is a version of H1N1, which it's called H1M1Z, and it plays a pretty significant role because she does go into the science of her virus quite a bit. They have scientists working with them.
Right.
They get a little bit into the genetics, I guess, of it. And
that's kind of getting into the second book a little bit more when we start getting into that.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, it's already going on in the first book. It just it's from Caden's perspective. She's not on the inside of all that information yet. Is coming, but so there's you know, like, I want to say that what I believe, and this is just a guess, I think it's leading more towards like genetic modification and genetic manipulation that maybe even started the whole thing off, because of all the details that are kind of given away in the second book. And since we have people in the room that haven't read it, we'll leave that one without the spoilers. But there's a lot going on.
Fair bit of sense, especially with the vampires. Vampires being closer to the old zombies.
The second book is on my list.
And the thing about it is that even though the books do drift away from it as the main focus, unlike The Walking Dead that we mentioned earlier, that stays focused kind of with the zombies and the gore. These books, the two that I've read, they never leave the realm that the zombies are kind of a main threat.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
There's a lot of other things going on. There's sabotage within their ranks. There's other creatures that are they're just kind of calling them what they think they resemble, because they're all formed from mutations of this virus. There's new stuff going on. But always in the background, there's like a million zombies stacked around them trying to eat everybody. And this is a threat that it interrupts even these other, you know, we talk about vampires. We talk about, well, maybe they're not exactly vampires, but whatever they are calling them vampires. And the zombies are even a threat to them. So, you know, I like that, you know, she sticks with the zombies as kind of a main residual worldwide threat. I mean, there's so much I want to talk about in the second book and I can't. So, there's a lot ado about the vampire zombie conflict in the second book. And I can't wait till you guys read it so we can discuss that. But I think probably the third one's going to, and now the fourth one, the fourth book in this series has just come out. It's been announced this month.
Right.
It's available. Defiant Hearts is the fourth one. Vengeful Hearts is third. And that's the next one I'm going to read. And then Defiant Hearts is going to go even further down the rabbit hole. And I hear from inside sources that there's even more. I've even heard the words time travel mentioned. So, you know, it gets pretty wild down this rabbit hole. And that's one of the fun things about this. I think for a young adult reader that wants a wildly expansive universe, a Harry Potter-esque kind of, and I'm not talking about style, I'm talking about scale. She has it on such a grand scale. I think that's one of the things that you can really...
Well, one of the things... I can mention that the first three books were checked out by the high school. I'm not sure how many people have read them there, but I came back after reading the first two, went to grab the third book. It's still checked out at the high school, so I can tell Suzanne that your books are being looked at, you know, and are at the
I think high young school, adults would so. Really get into the series. Yeah, I can see, I've really read a lot of reviews that she's got quite a few reviews on Amazon, and I've read a lot of them, and a lot of them seem like they're coming from young adults, and there's some older adults on there, too, that are really giving her a lot of praise for just having a fun, like you say, it's a grand romp, and, a very comic book feel, very fast-paced. Of course, I think in the way that Jonathan said slow, he meant more like he wanted it to get to bigger, deeper, like he wanted it to get into deeper plot holes with, like, the main characters and not jump around so much.
You mentioned that.
Jonathan wanted to mention something else about this specific scene, so go for it, Jonathan.
Well, we've been talking a little bit about Rafe a little bit, and we've been kind of... jumping around a little bit.
Yeah, we've jumped around completely. Yeah.
And we were talking about Rafe and how he kind of didn't know about his vampirism and how he was kind of introduced with that one bathroom scene.
Yeah.
And then it kind of goes to hotel scenes, and I don't want to get into that too much because it kind of develops him as a character. But the one thing that I want to say is he does, in better words, grows a set of balls. Because he goes
chemically induced.
Wow, chemically induced balls there. Oh, for you.
Well, the chemically induced part is a very, very, very bad way.
Right.
Okay, go for it.
He goes to this radio station.
I knew there was a reason why I keep coming back here every week.
And he's like, to all the vampires out there, I am the main vampire here, and, like, I am taking control and everything. If anybody has any questions, give me a call or something. And, like, this is broadcasting, and then the phone starts ringing, and he gets this call, and they're like, dude, you do not want to mess with us. And it's just kind of like, you have to be ballsy to do something like this. Go into a radio station and announce, hey, vampires exist. I am one of these vampires. If you have any questions, follow me. And then to get this call, like, watch yourself. It's just kind of, like, it does scare him, but he's still kind of arrogant about it.
I think his arrogance does show in that scene. I think that's a great and valid point. And I think another thing that shows is that...
kingship over it,
yeah,
to a degree.
Yeah, for a very limited time, Rafe. Whenever Rafe went into that radio station, he believed he was the most powerful vampire in the world.
Yeah,
he had no reason to believe that, but he believed it, and he didn't really think. He thought all of them were going to be younger and weaker than him. So he goes and he pronounces himself king of the world, kind of, and doesn't he mention his little lunatics that he has with him by these kids? Oh God! If there's one thing Suzanne Lambden just like with these kids, she
did
created
perfectly
some,
on these two kids.
These kids are weird. They're scary. Like they could be like if this becomes a movie, I could see them scaring other kids with nightmares. Oh, yeah. These kids are creepy. Then they're kind of his muscle. He kind of like uses them.
Well, technically, he's supposed to be their muscle.
Yeah,
he's supposed to be their protector.
But the whole time, you can tell he's manipulating them. I mean, they're very young.
Yeah,
and they're also vampires, and they have like magical powers. They're super powerful and scary. So anyway, what you were saying about that, like it was kind of courageous. And then especially the fact that he bothered to keep walking around out of there after they got the call from these very threatening individuals on the phone. But he was kind of goofing off. He thought that he, like, he didn't, I don't think he expected anyone to answer.
Right.
Yeah. So it wasn't that courageous as it was foolhardy.
Yeah.
It was kind of dumb, but not,
but
I mean.
But it was like, still. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
It was still one of them, you know, grow a pair of balls moments.
I can feel that. And that was kind of the turning point with his character, too.
Go ahead, Logan.
Logan.
The fire incident already happened before this?
Or? Yes.
Yes.
So yes, he's already swinging with.
How would he be having the kids as muscle?
He's the kids' muscle.
No. He's supposed to be their guardian, but.
The kids?
No.
No.
He doesn't kill them.
I remember him doing that.
No.
No. He's supposed to. They tell him that they are the emperor and empress or whatever, and that he's their guardian. But he's like, okay, kids. And then he goes to the radio station and says,
"Cinder says that she's a queen of vampires."
He kills Savannah. That's the only vampire he kills.
No, he also lets a bunch of zombies in and then lights the house on fire, doesn't he?
Yeah, but that isn't going to kill those kids.
So
it's unresolved.
It is, but I know those kids aren't dead.
Yeah.
It's resolved for me.
They're too cool of characters to let that be.
And when they're way too powerful for that to beat them. I mean, think about it. They take down 100.
Vampires were a credible threat. Sorry, zombies were a credible threat to vampires. I'm assuming that's in high numbers, but.
Wait, and they're a credible threat because of their numbers and their ability to destroy the vampire's food source. It isn't so much that they can hurt the vampires directly. They can if they can, like, pinch them in a corner or something with too many numbers. But what we're really talking about is their effect on the human race.
Right.
For this to be true, though, and this is something I think was pretty clever. Sorry, I'll let you talk right after this. But for that to be true, it kind of alludes that there were vampires working behind the scenes before this all started.
You wonder.
And that, whenever he mentioned it, whenever that call comes in, you kind of know
something
deeper is going on here than this. Just this, there's this new breed of vampire, but it ain't the only one that exists. Right. You know what I mean?
I could see that, but the sites to previous things I heard more was from the, what, Logan was his name, right? Same as me, but. The leader of the...
Yeah, he's the leader of the scavengers. Yeah.
His mentions towards... Who was the one girl?
Savannah.
No.
Cadence.
No.
Cinder.
Is that the one that...
Cinder's the little girl.
She's the little vampire girl.
No.
Describe the girl.
Where, Puma? You can probably
Luna?
Find out. Yeah.
Okay.
He's the one that mentioned some knowledge about hunting those previously.
Yes. Ooh. That's a valid point, too.
That is valid.
So we need to get back to what Jonathan was saying real quick.
I was going to go on what you were saying about the whole fire thing. It was an army that Cinder and Cerberus and Savannah created that he lured out of the house. And as soon as the zombies got to them, he burned them.
That's right. It was the army of underlings, the gnolls, the vampires that they created. They create Savannah, Cinder, and
Cerberus
create a ton of vampires, and they have them all living in that big house. That house is in Colorado Springs, too, by the way, at that hotel.
They had already turned them? Because I thought
they turned
a lot of them.
I thought they turned a lot of them. And
Cerberus didn't turn
I have to mention something here, Richard. I'm sorry. But
I know at least a large amount was set free of them that were just kept there.
A large amount was set free.
And they weren't vampires yet.
The ones that weren't set free were turned, because the one they did set a large amount of free, and then they kept a large amount because
that was Rafe saying, "Get out!"
Yeah,
right. He was trying to save them,
Cinder and Cerberus back.
Yeah,
right.
And they got out. You're right about that. But the others were ones
that, and that was Rafe saving them. He saved. They were still alive. He saved those people's lives. The people that stayed, they were not saved.
No,
they returned, and then they were eventually killed by Rafe with fire and zombies. Oh. But I have to mention this. I think it's crazy that because it's the four boys and April's away, we have spent this entire podcast talking about Rafe. We barely mentioned Highbrow. We almost didn't talk about Cadence, but we have gone straight up Rafe's butt, like with a stethoscope. We know everything about that. I think we've given more time to that character than she did in the book.
We decided to spoil stuff for Rafe, then we decided not to spoil stuff for anyone.
But the thing is Rafe, and Rafe is a great character. He's one of the best ones to follow. I could have talked a lot about Highbrow, and there's a lot going on there with him. And then there's like an incredible amount going on with Caden Sinclair.
Right.
But I think that, you know, for me, it's a definite yes as a series, and I can't wait to read the next one. And I really feel like you could probably cite and criticize this series on a lot of points. But I think that the main thing that you should know when you're sitting down to criticize this series is the lady that made the series is having fun. Her readers are having fun. It's a fun series. And, you know, if you can't see that, then there's no really point in playing the game.
Right, exactly.
Okay, go.
And there's a fair reason, because the first half of it's almost pure introduction.
Right.
With incidents that are somewhat notable. But then there's a lot of Rafe, some highbrow, and a fair amount of Cajuns, but a lot of Rafe.
Rafe is, I'm not saying you're wrong that Rafe's a main character, especially Rafe in the second half of the book.
Rafe seems to be the most focused on of this book.
Well, I think that what happens to him is the most important thing that happens.
Here's what I like about this book. Because she goes from Cadence to highbrow to Rafe to Cadence to highbrow to Rafe. She doesn't focus on just one character. She focuses on some of the bigger characters, and I like that. I like stories like that where they go from, they don't just focus on one main character. Like, they'll go from one character, and then they'll go to the second character and show their point of view, and then they'll go to the third character and show their point of view. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think that's a great way to incorporate something in a book. I don't know what you guys think about that.
It can be.
Oh, yeah. And that's why I felt it moved at a faster pace, because she did clip along. She did change characters quite a bit. She changed
Slow is not a word I would have used. But, I thought it was fast. I remember reading the first book in a couple days.
And I'm speed like of reading is generally how well you like the book.
Right.
It has a lot to do with it.
And Jonathan mentioned that it's not quite his style, but towards the end he was getting into it. So that's legitimate. I mean, the books aren't for everybody. I mean, there's a ton of mysteries and westerns that I just will not touch because I don't like that genre. Mm-hmm. So, but there have been a few that I have read that said, oh, okay, after I got into it, it was all right. So, you know, Jonathan's perfectly fine with his viewpoint because, you know, you never know what you're going to like until you read it. Some will like it more, some will like it less. You just never know. I think Lenny's right when it's said that this is fun. This is meant to be fun. It's like I've always said, when you go to the movies, I'm going to have fun. I'm not there to pick apart a movie. If I'm entertained for 2.5 hours or an hour and a half, that's what I went there for, was to escape reality.
I've always said
that this book is.
I've always said if it's ever won an Oscar, I probably don't like it as much as the one it beat. Well, because it's true. Like, we've said that when we've watched some more artsy pieces that were more thinker movies like that. We're action guys. We're like, we're like a really low rent version of the comic book man. Like, we're seriously like we want to enjoy what we're doing. We want to enjoy the action. A couple of us here are writers. We want to enjoy what we're writing about. We want to enjoy what we're reading. And I think that that's a vein that Suzanne hit directly with this. I mean, enjoyment. You know, these books were obviously done for a love of the genre, for the love of young readership, and wanting to do something that was, and I mean, like, talk about having growing a pair of big cojones, even if it's chemically induced, like, the scope and the scale of what she's doing with these books, I mean, you know, and when I heard the words time travel mentioned, and it was in your intro, so, you know, that's the first time I'd ever heard it, and and I'm like, oh my God, you know, like, she is going into an entire universe here that, you know, she can really build on. And I think that's great. It's a great, and,
you know,
great start.
Yeah.
Like, when I first started reading this, I was just like, I'm not going to like some of these characters. And then when I start getting into it, I'm just like, I like these characters. And there was one point, and like I said, I wanted to discuss this. There is a love triangle kind of type going through, and that's between Rafe. I don't know if it's a love triangle or like a love square, or I don't know, because
Savannah,
Rafe, I wasn't going to say
highbrow,
Savannah. It would be
highbrow and Savannah come close to that.
Yeah.
That's true.
And there is a lot of
Cadence, I was going to say Rafe, Cadence, highbrow, and Logan.
And Savannah, too. So it's
Savannah, but
a love
Savannah's
pinnacle.
Day.
Or pentagram, if you want to go that route. and there's another one too.
Open to
there's a lot. There's edition. A lot of love stories and morbid hearts.
Morbid. I heard from one of you. There's another at least one angle added in the next book.
Right.
So it's a love polygon open to additions.
Unequal to two.
It's kind of like love addition, pi squared.
I think unequal to two is as close as we're going to get. There's another love triangle that's a classic triangle, and it's very interesting between Thor and Raven, who are introduced,
and Luna.
And Luna. And the thing is that Raven and Luna are an item.
Right.
But when they're introduced, Raven's sort of introduced as Thor's girlfriend.
Right.
And then you find out that this is basically something that is being accepted by her other significant other, Luna. But Raven is kind of, she's just like the girl who has everything.
Right.
And tragedy strikes her. We don't want to get deep into that. But yeah, it's...
Luna seems fairly sane at the end of the book.
Well, it's still tragic for Raven.
Right.
But anyway, and then when these characters that, you know, are seen very secondarily in the first book, when they go into the second book, wow, they're like, you know, they take the spotlight and it becomes in a large way about these characters and a few others that are really. And so as I go to read the third book, I can't wait to see which perspectives are going to be pulled up, you know, and added to. And in a way, it's very much like Game of Thrones was written.
Right.
Whereas it starts out with some perspectives.
Not as long of books, though.
No. Yeah, for our audience, not nearly as long. But still very detailed and full of characters.
Yeah, true.
And then in the next book, then the differing perspectives are brought forward. And she isn't very, like, you know, it's not necessarily like, but I don't think it's as militant as the way Jonathan said. That was true. I didn't think it was done in, like, meter and pitch, you know, like, Cadence, highbrow, Rafe. But it does sort of hit that stride, doesn't it? And then in the second book, you'll find that Thor and a couple other characters are also added to that list, where it kind of follows their progress. Right. And that's one of the reasons I think the second book kind of focuses away from Cadence.
You just repeating names, Logan, or what?
Cadence, highbrow, Rafe.
He's telling you what order they're all going in.
Order-ish. That's what I remember-ish of it.
I remember-ish a lot of things. A lot of people tell me, that's a good remember-ish, Lynn. Why don't you go back and actually remember what happened? No, yeah. I'm just kidding, Logan.
Okay. Podcast world, we have came up with a new word.
Remember-ish.
So let's remember-ish.
Today's podcast is brought to you by the word remember-ish.
Exactly.
Which means I don't remember, but I'm not really going to admit that.
It's not quite done.
And then you move your hand kind of in a tilty way.
You know something's off about the memories in this one exact order, because I have no clue which one it is.
Right.
It could be... Eyebrows before one of the kittens.
All right, yeah. That's great.
True. Pretty
that's
sure it was super great. That ended with it.
Super good job, true. Logan. Yeah. Super good job.
But before we get too far more into it, I think probably that should probably be where we need to stop. Because if we go more into it, I think we're going to get more and more away.
Yeah, I think that this is a good book for you to also read out there. You don't have to just listen to our version. You may get a clearer view if you just read the book.
Because we skipped at least...
We skipped
intentionally some stuff.
Yeah.
Four-fifths.
Actually, you could probably read the book while listening to our podcast and definitely get more lost than without our guidance.
We skipped close to four-tenths of the
We actually plot. Didn't. I mean, we gave out that some of the viruses, but I don't think we gave out all that much. I mean, we gave out...
Well, especially if the...
Yeah.
We're good spoilers. We're like that really sweet grandma.
I know, right?
We're like that really sweet grandma with a candy dish. And you know, when you go to grandma's, you can always have a candy.
And it ends up like in a cough drop or something.
Yeah, and you choke and
why would you choke?
But anyway, this is done by Suzanne Lambden. It is Morbid Hearts, book one of the Dead Hearts series. Again, this is by Wyvern's Peak, the latest edition from the Beginning Group. And this was actually put out in 2014. You can find them pretty much on any of your digital book editions, or you can find it on Amazon in a actual book form, or go to a website and order them as well, or the Gannon's group. They'll have some links there that you can order books as well if you want a physical copy. So this is one, like I said, I know it's been checked out a few times here already. It's gone to the high school a few times already. So I think she's hit on something. Most people that have read it have liked it. Mm-hmm. I would say definitely if you're into the horror comic book action, I mean, like Lenny was saying, it's a little bit of everything and it appeals to a lot of different areas that people would
horror,
enjoy.
Romance, action, survival.
So yeah, romance is kicked in there. So I think everybody enjoyed it for the most part. Introduced Jonathan.
I think Jonathan enjoyed it more than he'll admit.
He found a new book series, it sounded like, though, at the end of the day. So that was good. That was cool.
Yep, I'm ready to read the second book. I'm not going to lie.
I think you'll enjoy it. I think you'll be able to follow the pacing better in the second book. You'll be more used to it. And it really does carry over well. And I think that maybe after we do do the interview with her, then we can talk about the second book. And by then, we can get the third book read and move on. I also wanted to mention something that, if we do get an interview, or I'd love to mention it
Suzanne,
to her.
Suzanne, are you listening?
A long time ago, on just a regular piece of art paper, I drew a little heart, and I drew some kind of veins, and I put zombies have dead hearts, too. And I kind of want to give it to her, because it's her series, you know, and I didn't mean, it was just a sentence that I was writing, I was goofing off, it didn't mean anything. And I just thought, and I saw it because I took a picture of it and put it on Facebook, and I thought, how appropriate for the Dead Hearts series, and I'd really like to, like, you know, I mean, she may not care. It's not like it's well done or super awesome art. I just thought it was really cool and, you know, kind of a little fitting homage to her series, which I guess she says is going to be 6 books. I bet you it ends up being like 12 or something crazy like that. Like, there's a lot of world here to go into.
If she wants to, there can be.
She totally could, I think.
Especially if she starts going outside the Colorado Springs area.
And I think she is. I think, I don't know, because I haven't started the third book, but that the end of the second book kind of looks like that's awesome. That they're going to start going into a wider world of sports.
Yeah. Good turn there. We'll leave it at that. You'll have to read the second book to find out what Lenny's talking about. So we've had fun here tonight. Hope everybody's had fun listening to us. We've enjoyed the book, recommend it highly. We have fun with it. That's the main thing. Yeah. Have fun with it, and you'll enjoy
it. Don't take yourself too damn seriously, and you'll be fine.
True. Until the next time, we will see y'all later. Bye.
See ya.
Thank you for listening to Comic Pop Library. We welcome your comments and suggestions by emailing us at admin@comicpoplibrary.com. All emails submitted become the property of Comic Pop Library and are subject for use in our show. We would also appreciate it if you would spread the word about Comic Pop Library by posting about us on Twitter, Facebook, or just tell someone about us. This podcast is not endorsed by any publisher, distributor, or studio, and it is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The views and comments of the show hosts are their own and are not reflective in any business, entity, or organization associated with ComicPopLibrary.com.